Okay, first of all, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me. And I'll also mention here that a lot of the modeling work, which I'll be showing, has been done in collaboration with BC Low, also at HAO NCAR. I have to admit, when I got this invitation, I did a bit of a double take on the sun and black holes, not immediately obvious the connections. Since then, I've done just a little bit of homework and see there are, in fact, connections, as we've heard, in particular, possibly with a hot corona being a manifestation of both. As for coronal mass ejections, well, perhaps we'll see. I think it's definitely true that the point which I'm going to try to make here, which is that coronal mass ejections are both manifestations of and crucial means to deal with the complexity of magnetic fields in the solar corona, and I think that may be a general point. Complexity is the key. The title here, 3D and Twisted. I know it sounds a bit like a horror film. But, well, maybe that's appropriate. This is the horror or the wonder of what we have to deal with in terms of the corona. Perhaps we can, yeah, turn in the front light. These are observations from the TRACE satellite. This resolution actually has been downgraded a little bit because it's in troubles getting the screen working. But it's incredibly unprecedented high spatial resolution. You're looking at extreme ultraviolet. So this is the coronal plasma at emitting at about 1,000,000 degrees or so. Let me get one of these pointers. At the same time, there's dark material like this, which is material seen in absorption, probably material about 10,000 degrees. Let me just show another one because you can never really have too many of these trace movies, I think. And just the complexity of the structures as well as the clear dynamics of the system does make you wonder about, you know, what can we really do? I knew a stellar astronomer who used to say that he preferred stellar astronomy because extragalactic astronomy, you had to really, you had the challenge of finding observations to test your model. Whereas solar astronomy, you have so many observations that no model can stand up to them, basically. And he said that in stellar, there's just the right amount of model versus observation so that you had some feeling that you were getting somewhere. And there's, I don't know about the truth of the first statement about extragalactic, but definitely a kernel of truth in the solar physics. So the key is to try to figure out which complexity is the important complexity that tells us something about the fundamental physics of the system that we need to include in our models. And yet at the same time, not get so complex that we don't kind of lose track of what's going on. So the observation will really be split into two parts, the talk will be split into two parts, observations and modeling. And I'll start out talking about really the 3D nature of the coronal mass ejection. And let me say right now I'm going to be calling it the CME. Now every field has its jargon. I'm going to do my best not to fall into the jargon trap. If I do, just shout out and ask me, what do you mean, a filament? What are you saying? So just shout out if I do. But the CME, when it's observed from different views, can be very different. And by different views, I mean both in terms of if you're looking at the CME scene at the limb coming out in a coronagraph image like this one right here. By limb, oh, I just slipped into it. Limb, I mean the edge of the sun. Or if you're looking at something seen on the disk of the sun coming at you, for example. So depending on what view you're looking at, but also depending on whether you're looking at something like this picture here, which is basically white light image. It's photospheric light that's been scattered by coronal electrons. So it's something that gives you information about the electron density in the corona, but not the temperature. Whereas other observations I'll show you will be giving you information about both density and temperature. Depending on how you look at it, you'll get very different structures. The second thing which I'm going to show is the twist, which I think is fundamental to this problem. Now, the twist that we see are, generally speaking, in the observations of the coronal plasma. The corona is nearly a perfect conductor. We've got flux freezing, so what the field does, the plasma does. This is crucial because the magnetic field in the corona, the magnetic field which is the cornerstone of so many of these modeling efforts, et cetera, we don't actually observe it in the corona. We can observe it at its boundary in the photosphere of the sun, but we really cannot get a good three-dimensional description of the magnetic field in the corona from observations directly. So flux freezing is critical because we can use the observations of the plasma to get an idea of what's happening in the magnetic field. And then you get a sort of a feedback loop going where the observations inspire models of what your magnetic field is. And then your models, if you're doing an MHD balance can give you an idea of the 3D plasma structure, which you need to be able to deconstruct the different views that you get. Which brings us to the models. And I'll talk a little bit about the magnetic field topologies. I brought my slinky. I can't always have to have this with me. So I have it on hand. And also I'll talk about structures called sigmoids, which are basically just S-shaped structures that have been of interest of late. And also I'll talk about one model which uses a more Sphermach type magnetic field, which will be this full MHD model. And I'll conclude by trying to get an idea of the big picture relevance of all this. You know, why do we care about the magnetic twist? And it turns out it's very important for the energetics and possibly for issues of prediction, but I'm not really going to emphasize that. And I'll, again, mention the point of trying to deconstruct the three-dimensional structures. Okay, here we go. This is a coronal mass ejection. Again, this is a white light coronagraph image. So the sun essentially is underneath this white circle. And then there's an occulting disk on top of that so that you can see the scattered light in the corona. Coronal mass ejections come in a whole bunch of different sizes and shapes and sorts. In this case, you see one that starts out, let me go back. The first one that you see coming off is moving out reasonably slowly, and then it's followed by this guy, which is a much faster structure. The first one is going out not really at a different, just about the speed of the slow solar wind, whereas this next one's going out twice as fast at least. Another thing to point out is the snow in the image that happens as this thing blasts out. These are energetic protons which are associated with that event. So the observations were taken on the SOHO spacecraft, which is seated at the L1 point between the sun and the Earth. And as the thing goes, it's maybe 15, 20 minutes later, you'll get these snow of the energetic protons hitting the spacecraft. CMEs are of interest in general to a lot of people because of their geoeffective nature. These things can hit the Earth and can affect the Earth. They can knock out cable TV and cell phones. So obviously, a lot of people are interested in trying to understand how they work. They're also a very interesting physical problem. Here is just a demonstration of the sort of structures you get associated with these coronal mass ejections. This is another coronagraph image, a slightly lower coronagraph. Again, we can see the sun, this disk of the sun. And as the CME goes out, you can see that it has a very characteristic structure, which is called a three-part structure, having a bright dome, followed by a cavity, followed by a core of even brighter material. We're going to see that that core is associated with other observations. I'll get back to that in a second. But not every CME shows you this three-part structure. A fair number of them, especially the ones you know are near the limb, I believe it's something like 60 or 70% of the ones near the limb have the three-part structure, but not all of them. This is a slightly more subtle picture. I apologize, difficult to show you, but this is time sequence going 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the structure I'm interested in. This is the CME, much fainter. And as you can see, there's a bright region here, or I hope you can see, and then there's a dark cavity and there's a U shape. Now, these sorts of coronal mass ejections have been used as possible signs of a reconnection of the magnetic field in the corona, giving you that kind of U shape. And that's certainly a possibility. However, I'm going to show in a model that I will show in a few minutes, a 3D model, that same three-part CME, when seen from a different viewing angle, can give you something that looks just like this. So you have to be very careful about interpreting these effects. Well, those were views of a CME, if my head is the sun, going off like this. The ones, I guess, that, you know, if you care about your cell phone or your cable TV that you care about are the ones that are coming right out at you. So recent observations, boy, that's a little scary, I'm sorry. This is an infinite loop. These are called halo CMEs. And they've been very valuable in predicting coronal mass ejections because you actually see them coming out at you. Or do you? The trouble is that in this sort of projection, you can't tell the difference between one that's coming right at you or one that's going away from you. But it does give you a 50-50 idea of whether there's an Earth-directed CME. In order to get an idea of which way it's going, one thing to do is to look at it not just in an occulted coronagraph, but in observations of the solar disk. So this here is observations of solar disk. In this case, I'm showing a very cool material. And I show this to show the emission, cold emission, again about 10,000 degrees, of the sort of the remember the dark stuff that we saw in absorption in the first trace movies? This cooler material is generally known as filaments or prominences. It's one of the awkward things about the terminology that they're called prominences if you see them at the limb, like this. But if you happen to see them like this structure here, you might see on the disk, it's called a filament. They're exactly the same thing, just depending on where you're seeing them. The prominences are particularly interesting because they have association with the CMEs. And in fact, what this picture shows is a CME in process, and here is the prominence, and here is the CME. And this lines up to show you that the three-part CME, the core of the CME is in fact the prominence. This shows you prominences in absorption. Let me just show you them again. That shows you an emission. This shows you an absorption. So again, this is hotter million-degree plasma, and the absorption of the, this case, you'd call it a filament because it's really sort of on the disk, as it erupts in a coronal mass ejection. Got another one because two trace movies are better than one. And there you can see it also. In this case, this is one that's coming from the center of the disk and is coming right at you. And there's a lot of structure in these things. Now, this is sort of a long movie, but it's an important one to talk about. I should really be calling these transient dimmings. There's an active region here, and by active region, I mean a region which is bright in emission and has strong magnetic fields associated with them, and often flares associated. There's going to be a flare coming up. I'll point to it. There, that was a flare. But actually, what I'm showing you for the movie is not for the flare. Flares and CMEs have a tempestuous relationship historically, but the important thing to realize is that you can have plenty of flares with no coronal mass ejections, and you can even have coronal mass ejections without flares. But they do have a relationship, probably to do with the magnetic field and reconnections associated with the CME. But if you look for a sign of a CME, if you're trying to predict one coming at you, say, and you just use flares, it's not going to do it. These things, these transient coronal dimmings seen in a sequence here, are good indicators of a coronal mass ejection. Not every coronal mass ejection has a clear dimming, but when you see a dimming, there's a CME that has gone off. And several of them occur in this movie. There's one there. I think we've missed a couple already. Here comes the big one with the twin dimmings, one on either side. This particular region has, I think, in this movie, four or five dimmings and CMEs. And that's very characteristic. And the other thing I want to point out is that what I mentioned, the twin dimmings. In this particular case, you had a dimming on either side of the central bright flaring region. And that's going to be of interest to us in terms of modeling the topology. Okay, so my conclusion from the previous slides is that CMEs have a complex three-dimensional density and temperature structure. This complexity is well illustrated in the twist that's associated with them. This image I don't think has ever really been topped. There's been some fantastic movies and recent images, but this is the so-called Granddaddy Prominence from 1946. And does it remind you of anything? Other observations also seem to show something which has a twisted or slinky type structure or braided type structure. This is the picture I had on my first view graph. Again, this is white light. So this is not showing you a temperature effect, but a density effect. This is the core of the CME, and you see real crisscross braided type structures. One of the questions that really needs to be answered is, where does this twist come from? When does it show up? Does the twist arrive during the actual CME, or are there twisted structures that exist prior to the CME in the sun? I should mention, if I haven't already, the filaments or prominences that we see on the sun are long-time quiescent things. They're not just eruptive phenomena. So if you were to look at this, go out and look at a picture in H-alpha of the sun, you would see these filaments all over the sun, dark structures, and occasionally they disappear. Occasionally there's a clear eruption of them. But they definitely have long-time quiescent. They sit around for days or even weeks. So the question is there a twisted structure, a slinky-type structure or whatever, that exists before the CME, or is it formed in the CME? Well, that's something which really needs to be proved, and there's different ways of modeling it. But I think some of the high-resolution observations from TRACE of the filaments seen in absorption on the disk demonstrate, if you take a look at this structure here, and now look at this one, this is a quiescent structure. It's not an erupting filament at all. Demonstrate a similar braided crisscross type structure. Now, maybe this is just because I'm a believer, but it's something that needs to be resolved. Okay, sigmoids. Sigmoids is just a name that was chosen to describe S shapes. In this case, these are S shapes associated with active regions observed in X-rays, in hot, very hot corona, up 4 million degrees and above. These are hot loops, probably, or complexes of loops. And they, again, can last for days and reform multiple times. The region I showed you with the twin dimmings had a sigmoid in X-rays associated with it. The reason they're interesting in terms of CMEs are for two reasons. One, because you can show a correspondence of events where you take a structure that has an S shape, then you see a halo CME, and the S shape becomes a cusp shape. So the argument is you had something which erupted, and then you had a reconnection behind it, which gives you the cusp shape. The other reason they're interesting in terms of CME is that statistical studies of active regions, characterizing them as having S shapes or not, which admittedly is a bit of an art, nevertheless, there appears to be a correlation between the regions that have S shapes and the regions that erupt. They're more likely to erupt than regions that don't have S-type structures. I'm briefly just going to mention this because I think it's important for our modeling and our topology, is that when you have these, in this case, this is an emission, so this is loops in X-rays. Underneath is the magnetic field, positive and negative, blue and yellow. And at the same time, there was a filament, so cold, dense material. So these are very different things. This is a hot loop-type material. This is cold, dense material. And as you can see, they both give you this general S, which is basically the shape of the underlying neutral line. And they're more or less co-aligned. So sigmoids have had a lot of hype, maybe a little too much. They make a nice sound bite. There was a NASA press conference, and the headline was, S marks the spot. These are the ones to watch. But you have to be careful about using them for prediction tools, because all they tell you is that this is a region that maybe is more likely to erupt. Maybe it's more energetic. It's got more energy. It's more likely to have a CME. But that doesn't tell you that it's going to erupt right when it's lined up to hit the Earth, for example. It doesn't tell you the details of the magnetic field. Geoeffective events tend to have a certain direction of the magnetic field. So it's limited. It's potentially worthwhile. What I think they're interesting for are as yet another indicator of twist and another thing to take into consideration when trying to model the magnetic field associated with CMEs and to try to understand the energetics of the CME process. So that basically concludes the observational component. These are the many faces of the CME seen in scattered white light associated with density, seen in this case, emission, and in this case, and seen in active regions as S shapes and twist, etc. So they're very complex creatures. Which brings us to the model and the theory. These are the equations that we're essentially looking at, because the corona is really an ideal MHD terrain for most of it. So what we need to do is to come up with a model complexity which has enough to gather to capture the important features that you see in the observations and still give us a good feel for what's going on. Before I go into some of the CME models, I thought I should have a very brief divergence here. This is a model done of, in this case, an accretion disk around a protostar, which has, in this case, I believe they have a dipolar type magnetic field, and then they have differential rotation in the accretion disk, which leads to shearing of magnetic foot points, which leads to the expansion of these loops, eventual reconnection behind them, and the eruption of a plasmoid seen here. This is very familiar to the CME world because this is a very standard basic type model of a CME that has been used in the past. Models, current models, I think, have looked into some other aspects, though. For example, the complexity of the magnetic field. Rather than looking at just a single arcade that's being sheared, this so-called breakout model actually has a quadrupolar type magnetic configuration. And there's some sort of shearing, either because you've got motions and shearings, or you have some sort of emergence, flux emergence, so that there's magnetic shear created, which leads to reconnections. And the reconnections are such that you open up the magnetic field partially, which is crucial for the energetics of the system. and allow this thing to come out. And you can also see that in the eruption, there's a lot of twist associated with the CME. So in modeling the magnetic field, the twist is key and the complexity is key. The slinky has been a very useful building block for a lot of models, not just in the CME. Prominences, or filaments, depending how you look at them, also are modeled in their quiescent state. And one of the questions is, how do you get that cold material just sitting up there in the hot corona? So what you need is you need some sort of magnetic structure to support it. And you could have a sort of a dip structure, which has a valley to hold the material, so you have like an arch with a dip. Or you could have a slinky. The slinky does the trick rather nicely. If I have a magnetic field like this, and I were to lie something in it, it would be supported by the bottoms of the lines of the slinky. And that's what I'm basically showing here, the materials set there. But the slinky-type flux rope has been used to model prominences. It's been used to model CMEs. It's been used to model emerging magnetic flux using magnetic field observations at the surface of the sun and interplanetary magnetic clouds. So they're all trying to get into something using this technique. And it's very useful. What we're going to use in the model, which I'm now going to show you, though, is a variation on that, a more spheromak-type magnetic field. But without going into too much detail, because I don't really have time, think of the slinky turned on itself and sort of stretched and warped. It's a magnetic field inside a sphere with equivalent amounts of toroidal and poloidal magnetic field. And the reason we go in that direction is that observations sort of push us that way, because CMEs seem to have a spheroidal nature. If you're looking at a CME at the limb, and you're looking at the filament or prominence that underlies it, and you know where its neutral line is going, there doesn't seem to be any change in the CME depending on the orientation of the neutral line. So it doesn't appear to be a linear-type, slinky-type structure. And as I'll show, you can also get, you can model quite a few of the features using a spheroidal structure from many views. So that's really our driving force here. Here's the magnetic field. This is a mathematical analytic model that I'm going to be showing. And the description of the magnetic field inside the sphere has been used before in different astrophysical applications as magnetized star or as the Crab Nebula, and more recently in solar physics in terms of the emergence of magnetic flux in a delta sunspot. This is the cartoon. This is not a cartoon. This is actually the magnetic field lines defined by this mathematical structure. So we have a spherical structure, and we've used analytic methods to embed it in an otherwise open magnetic field. The green means field lines pointing out. The red are field lines pointing in. It's basically a split monopole type structure with a current sheet in between. The blue, yellow, and pink lines are field lines inside the sphere. So essentially, they're nested tori. Each one of those is a single line winding around many times. But actually, what we use in the model is this magnetic configuration solves an axisymmetric axisymmetric within the sphere. The whole system's not axisymmetric. This is a sphere embedded in an otherwise open field, only just offset to one side. Using mathematical transformations, we take it to a case which solves a full magnetostatic equation, including the effects of gravity. And this is just a radial transformation of the radial coordinate r to r plus a, which collapses some of the points, stretches and collapses some of the points into the origin. I should have said that this picture here shows the same structure as this. We've left the external field alone, and we've rotated the spherical structure, so that in this first case, we were looking perpendicular to its axis, and in the second case, you're looking along its axis. And our stretched version, we're following the same convention. Here you're looking perpendicular to its axis, and here you're looking along it. What this stretching and tethering does is it creates a structure which is where our prominence and the core of our CME is going to sit in the bottoms of this magnetic field. And also there's going to be a cavity which is created again by the magnetic tension forces in this structure. And the last step, sort of whizzing through this model, is to take this magnetostatic description, which solves magnetostatic equations with gravity, to an MHD solution. And this is done, and I'm not going to show you the page full equation, but I can, through a technique that Lowe developed, which shows how using a certain form of a polytrope between the pressure and the density, in particular gamma equals 4/3, you can transform a magnetostatic solution to an MHD solution. It's an MA special MHD solution. It's a solution where the structure is moving out self-similarly. But observations of the CME show us that in general it is similar to self-similar, if you want to put it that way. It essentially expands outward like a giant balloon as it moves out. And by the time it gets to the Earth, this thing is huge. So the result is we end up with a 3D analytic solution, which satisfies time-dependent IDL MHD for a CME expanding out of the corona. Let me show you some of these results. There we go. This is showing you the magnetic field topology. The white line is a single field line, which is winding around multiple times. The blue lines are simple arcade lines. Basically, whether they wind or not has to do with how much of it has emerged in this particular structure. The material that then can sit in the bottoms of the lines is represented by this dark structure, which you can see overlies the neutral line, which is intrinsically S-shaped. If you do the full MHD analysis and calculate the density structure that's in force balance here, and calculate the white light associated with it, this is what you get. You get something which is a three-part type CME expanding outward, very similar to what you observe. And this is what we were trying to do when we started out with this model. What got interesting was when we started looking at it from different points of view. So this is the view I've just shown you. You're looking, in this case, along the axis where you have material supported, and it's a three-part type CME. These are magnetic field lines on the right. If I now take it and rotate it 90 degrees, so I'm looking perpendicular to the axis, you get something which has this U-shaped structure. And this is without any reconnection. There may well be a reconnection that happens. In fact, we expect this to happen because the CME that we're modeling in our self-similar evolution really is showing you the middle state of the thing. Once it started moving and before, there may be reconnections closing behind it, shocks building up in front of it. But it's very interesting to see how the projection effects can fool you in a structure like this. And this is another example. Both those pictures I showed you looked kind of symmetric about the limb. But if you take that structure and you rotate it off the limb and you tilt its neutral line a little bit, this is what you get, something which is asymmetric, where the core is off to one side. And plenty of CMEs look like that. They're not all perfectly centered. Here's the cavity up here, and then the core is off to one side. So this just demonstrates how this kind of model can be used to deconstruct the observations. What about the other view? These were all CMEs shooting off the sides. What about a CME coming towards you? Well, we saw the manifestations of that were, one of them were these twin dimmings around a central core. And that, again, comes out naturally from this particular topology. This is a slice of density at the base. Here's the core. And here are the two dimmings, again, sort of asymmetrically skewed around this S-shaped neutral line. The other manifestation we showed were the sigmoids. Well, here the model doesn't really show you what you want. The model, this is the equivalent, this is X-ray emission, and this is what the model shows you, where you take the density and temperature determined and you calculate an emission. And you get the dimmings all right, but you don't really get an S-shaped structure in the middle. But this doesn't surprise us. The dimmings we know by looking at them at different temperatures, because you see the same basic dimming at different temperatures, you think it's probably a density effect by something like what we're showing here, which is a dimming which is caused by a structure which essentially has that twin dimming built into it, expanding towards you. And your line of sight starts getting less and less material, and you get an increasing dimming. The X-ray sigmoid, on the other hand, is very much a temperature effect. This particular model, with its simplified thermodynamics, polytrope, is not really going to show you that. For that, we need to think a little more about the magnetic topology. Why do we get X-ray sigmoids where we do? Why is that part of the plasma heated? Well, if we associate reconnections with dissipative heating, then the question is, where would you get reconnections? You can show mathematically that you can get reconnections at magnetic null points, but you can also get reconnections at so-called separatrix surfaces, where you have different magnetic flux surfaces adjacent to one another, so that if I had a field line here and followed it, it did this. If I have a field line right next to it, it goes somewhere completely different. If you then get dynamic jiggling of the bottom foot points, you can set up discontinuities, tangential discontinuities between these two flux systems and reconnections. And these are where you expect current sheets and reconnections to occur. And I have some other examples, but just to give you, in our context, one possibility. If you have a twisted structure surrounded by an otherwise simple arcade, you might expect these reconnections to occur at the interface between the two regimes. In this case, I've just drawn a cartoon. This is the same kind of cartoon I drew earlier to show you how the slinky supports mass. In this case, I'm showing you our model. And again, I'm just drawing a few field lines to kind of indicate that you have simple arcade-type field lines. Each colored field line is a different field line, which are adjacent to a much more complex twisted structure, and you might expect a reconnection to happen in that regime. However, to study this more carefully, we've been looking at other topologies, similar ones, and I don't really have time to go into it too much, so I'm just going to probably just show you this one. This is a solution of a magnetic configuration. It's not the Cyrillac solution, it's another one, but it's again a spheroidal magnetic field, as shown here from three different views. These are just example field lines, blue and green. And we've very carefully calculated where the separatrix surface would be between the flex elements, and that's what we've drawn here. And it's, you know, it's possible, it's giving us some indications that we're in the right direction, but this is something that we're working a little bit more on. Anyway, the point I want to make with this is that the magnetic topology is crucial for interpreting the observations. And that's not all it's crucial for. Let me just go to my conclusions. Start out just by saying what I've already said. We've got a model which shows a nice 3D twisted structure, and it's useful for deconstructing the observations. Well, let's get to the big picture. Why do we care if the CME is twisted? What does this matter? Well, it matters quite a lot, perhaps. I've already mentioned that the plasma and the magnetic fields are giving you an idea of what's going on in terms of the twist. The twist is important in this system because of a property of the magnetic helicity, which is associated with the twist of the magnetic fields. We believe that in the corona, in the ideal MHD corona, the magnetic helicity is a conserved property. So if you have a structure in the corona which has a certain amount of twist, you can't just get rid of it. Now, structures in the corona are going to generally try to go to their minimum energy configuration, and flaring and reconnections is a method to get from a higher energy state to a lower energy state. But if there's twist in the structure, you can't get rid of all of the energy because you can't get rid of the twist, and the twist means a field that's not potential. So the twist essentially stores magnetic energy in a manner that that can be then used in the pushing out and the eruption of the CME. So the twist, say you have a very twisted structure, which is in some sort of equilibrium, you give it some sort of trigger, it starts to move out, it expands, the helicity is removed from the system, and the energy in the helicity can be transferred to the CME. The CME, a concept proposed by Lowe at HAO, is that the CME then are sort of workhorses of the solar cycle. That these, they are methods of the corona to get rid of its magnetic helicity and to get rid of its magnetic flux. The sun reverses its polarity every 11 years in the solar cycle. So it goes from so you have old cycle magnetic field, positive field, which has to be replaced by new cycle magnetic field, say negative field, in the northern hemisphere. How do you do this? The CME is going to be a method of getting rid of the old cycle flux, allowing the new cycle flux to then emerge. This is not saying that this is a means of powering the dynamo or the change of the cycle itself, but it's a means of getting the corona into par with the rest of the system. And to sort of illustrate that in terms of the helicity, observations show that there's some interesting hemispheric rules about the magnetic twist in the corona. This is an X-ray image, and here's one region that if you have a trained eye or a believer or whatever, you would identify as a sigmoid, and as in fact a sigmoid that's backwards S. Whereas in the south, you have another one where you have a sigmoid, which is a forwards S. And since a backwards S is essentially just an N on its side, it makes you wonder if the sun knows English or perhaps French and is somehow labeling its poles. Because the weird thing is, this doesn't change with the solar cycle. When the magnetic polarity changes, this N in the north, S in the south, does not change. So if you have S-shaped flux always coming into the north, and N-shaped flux, oops, got it backwards, sorry, N in the north, S in the south, then you're just going to have a continuous buildup, and you need a means of somehow getting rid of some of it. And that is possibly what the CME is giving you. So to conclude, understanding the origin, evolution, and removal of magnetic twist is fundamental to understanding the sun. And the CMEs may be the key to that particular puzzle, with relevance from the solar interior all the way out to the Earth, and who knows, maybe even further to black holes and accretion disks. We'll see. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was so very impressive and very refreshing to hear about CME and not CMB.
Well, I'll have to learn your jargon.
Mitch.
What do we need to know about the turbulence in the high beta region where the flip points are anchored in order to figure out how much helicity we're likely to be pumping into the coronas there, or the sun cloud?
I'm not sure that I can really answer that. It's a question as how the helicity gets put into the sun. For example, in the hemisphere, to the corona. For example, the hemisphere rule. If you think of it as just difference rotation, shearing, it gives you the wrong direction. You get N in the south and S in the north. So it's a very complex problem, and recent models have included all sorts of flows, for example, and also you have to consider the emergence of real entire magnetic flux bodies from beneath the surface. So I don't think it's a resolved question, and I also think I'm not really the right person to answer the question regarding turbulence. There's definitely some people here probably sitting in this audience who could give you a better answer. So maybe I'll point you to them.
How well do we understand the physics of reconnection?
Oh, that's another loaded question. We're going to get, I think, some of that from a talk later from Dana Longcope. Dana's going to answer all your questions, basically, in this talk later today. I think that'll answer. But it's a tricky question. There's reconnection can happen. You may not be able to do it just in terms of letting the ideal MHD break down locally and in terms of dissipation. I heard some talks which invoke the Hall effect to try to understand how the reconnection comes in. So again, I don't think I can really answer that question. You guys asked some tough ones. Excuse me?
You have reconnection, and how do you treat it? Your result depend on the...
In terms of our model. Well, in terms of our model, we're doing an ideal MHD model, and we don't actually include reconnection. And in terms of the topology, I've been sidestepping this problem, really, by looking at the topology, looking at the regions, the separated surfaces between the flux systems, and saying, well, this is where I expect reconnection to turn in. But I have not personally modeled the full numerical. It's not an easy problem to do.
What's the term? You showed structures that lasted for a while.
Yes.
And then
Well, that's a good question. Looking at the observations, there definitely seems to be an interplay between emerging structures and between pre-existing structures. So, for example, we observed a region which was sigmoidal as it passed the limb, so for 14 days. And this thing emerged, and it had a sort of a stable period of a couple of days, and then it started having eruptions. I think that what you have going on is equilibrium. Basically, a loss of equilibrium followed by a reformation of equilibrium. The fact that these sigmoidal regions appear multiple times may tell you that you have one structure, say a flux rope type structure, and it somehow kicked and it emerges and it reaches some sort of equilibrium with the surrounding fields. Maybe there are flares that happen as it dissipates as much energy as it can while still keeping its helicity conserved. So you come to some sort of quasi-stable state where you have minimum energy for that amount of helicity, say. Then something comes in and kicks the system again. Maybe new emerging flux adds helicity. Maybe the force balance with the materials, the gravity, maybe you lose some of it. Maybe the magnetic field is pushed up against outer fields, like in the breakout, and you have reconnections, and you lose the thing that the magnetic fields above that are keeping it down. Something kicks it out of its equilibrium, and some or all of the structure erupts. After that, say, from the observations, it doesn't appear like it usually all erupts necessarily. So say some of it erupts, It now has to find a new equilibrium for that amount of helicity getting again to a minimum energy, and then it can be stable for maybe another couple of days and so on, and the cycle repeats.
So it's really the disruption that determines how long they can last.
Yeah. It's the evolution of the structure in terms of its external coronal context and what's coming up from below and how that disrupts it.
Right, so that does cut it off. That's a separate problem.
Excuse me?
So that's a separate problem.
Oh, yeah. No, it's another problem.
Frank?
No. The answer is, in a sense, perhaps yes to both, actually. The CMEs are the waste bin. They're taking out the excess stuff. Now, if they didn't, though, I mean, they may be a very necessarily waste bin. Otherwise, you'll just be covered in garbage. But they're not driving the cycle. I think that's the basic idea, though.
Can you please tell us something about the scale of these effects and the processes like the magnetic fields in the sun, and the magnetic fields in the stars, and the care of the magnetic fields in the black hole?
Right.
How we can apply young stars?
Well, I'm not sure, partly because I'm not really versed with your scales. However, I can give you some idea of the scales in the corona. What kind of scales do you mean? The field strengths, or?
For example.
Well, field strengths in the strong field can get certainly on the order of tens and hundreds of Gauss. Probably use different units. I think this is the sort of question where you need to sit down and you know, write down the numbers on the page and really start doing the comparison that way. So, length scales, I mean, the solar radius, oh boy, what are we talking about here?
I'm not putting this differently. How successful these models and these ideas are in explaining magnetic fields in other stars?
Right. Well, I don't really know how to answer that, having not applied it to any other stars. I mean, this is sort of why I'm here, to listen to what you guys are doing to try and make the connections. But I'm not sure. I mean, I can't answer that off the cuff. Sorry.
Do clusters that diverge from the sun already twisted, or is your initial twist from the flip points where they differ?
That is a question at issue right now, and an important one. There's evidence from the magnetic field observed at the photosphere, vector magnetic field, so you get an idea of their 3D direction and the currents that are there, that they emerge with twist. However, there are a lot of people who believe that the twist is imposed through the motions. It may or may not matter. For a model like this, it doesn't matter because you put the twist in. Even for the model I showed you, the breakout model also, it's not really addressed how the twist is put into it, whether it's through shearing or emergence. That's something which needs to be determined really from observations, and they're getting there, I think.
I'd
like to answer. Oh, yeah. And you.
I think the most viable tactic would be, it's clear that the twist emerges with the magnetic field, it's already
I completely agree with him. I'm actually on the side that believes it comes from emergence, but I was trying to be very moderate. So.
And the last question.
Is it true that the CMEs are concentrated towards lower latitudes, like the sunspots where they emerge, and also is there a moderation with the cycle and both the time and the latitude?
Well, if Mei Zhang is in the audience, she definitely knows the answer to that question and has presented results on that. But basically, the answer is they have a modulation with the solar cycle. There's a very curious anti-correlation with the active regions, where the active regions start out at the equator. Oh boy, we get this right, Mei. You say it. They go the opposite way of the active regions, which may be very important.
I think there's a difference between fast MEs and slow MEs. And for fast MEs, it's always related to the active regions. And for slow MEs, it is very uniform along all altitudes. And also, there's difference between the ascending phase of the solar cycle and the descending phase of the solar cycle. In the ascending phase of solar cycle, the position of the average position of these CMEs is different from active regions. And for the descending phase, it is almost follow the pattern of the active regions.
So there's some very interesting differences which may be related to this point about how the CMEs remove the flux from the solar cycle. That's why it's being studied.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.